It's May 6, 1996. I'm Dawn Clayton, and I'm here with Patricia Smedley. We're going to be talking about her experiences as a high school Russian teacher. And let's start off with a few questions. How long have you been in Kodiak?
This time we've been in Kodiak since 1980. We lived in Kodiak from 1972 to 1974, earlier.
Good. And how do you like Kodiak?
Oh, it's home.
Forever.
Well, this is sort of where we decided that we were going to settle and stay. The first time that we were here, we liked it well. Our children were small at that time. And my husband was in the military. We transferred several times, and then we ended up coming back here. All of our tours while he was in the military were in Alaska, except one, which was in New London, Connecticut. So we came to Alaska in 1965 from Ohio, and we've been here ever since except for that four-year tour in Connecticut. And while we were there, we could hardly wait to get back to Alaska. And here we are now in Kodiak.
Great. Now, how long have you been teaching?
Well, I taught for 4 years when my husband was in dental school. And then I quit teaching, and I didn't teach for about 20 years because I was wife and mother. I was just taking care of the home and the kids. And I went back to subbing in 1982, I think, here in Kodiak. And my degree is in history. And so I've always taught social studies. When I started subbing, and then when I got a semester job, because Fred Zaroff was elected to the legislature, and he was the junior high social studies teacher. So when he would go to Juneau in January, they needed a replacement for him for a semester. And I was lucky enough to be able to do that for 2 years. So I taught 82 and 83, the spring semester, 7th and 8th grade social studies at the junior high school.
And so how did you get involved with the with teaching Russian?
Well, after that, I ended up with a full-time job at the high school teaching social studies. The curriculum at that time Russian wasn't being taught. Russian had been taught at the high school several times before this, before we came back. When we came in 1980, I think they had taught Russian up through 79, and then it wasn't offered anymore. At one time, Jerry Wilson, who's the arts council director, had taught the Russian at the high school, and then he later taught it at the college. And then Georgine Sink, who taught at the high school, taught English. She also taught Russian for a while, but then the program was dropped and she just taught English. And when I started teaching social studies, my first jobs were, my topics were basically U.S. history and Western civilization. The curriculum was changed, and I'm trying to think of the year, and I'm not exactly sure of the year that the curriculum was changed to reflect a more global nature. I would say probably 86, maybe in 86, maybe 87, to include something called Pacific Rim Studies. And I ended up teaching Pacific Rim Studies because nobody else wanted to. And I learned a lot from that, but that also included Russian, you know, Russian history more than it had with the Western civilization. And I taught a Russian language culture history course in 88 and 89, and that course involved basically was half language and half history. And I wasn't really well versed in Russian at that time. I knew the Cyrillic alphabet and I knew some of the words. So the way we ran that program was that we bought here I'm thinking in all these things so I could be so cool in this, in this and not make any mistake. It was a program through University of North Dakota, a correspondence course.
Right, okay.
And it was all on tape, on video cassettes. And so the Russian teacher was always there on the tape. So she taught the language, and I supplemented and drilled the kids on that. And then I also filled in with the history part of the language. And then that program was dropped in 1990.
Okay.
And basically it was dropped because I ended up having cancer, and I had to cut my teaching time one semester, so they just dropped the Russian program at that time.
Was it your choice to develop the Russian language course, or did they approach you about it?
It was, I wanted to do it, and also Larry Ledoux wanted to develop the Russian language course. So because of my teaching half-time, we weren't able to work it in that particular year, but he worked on developing it. And then in 1992, I took a year's leave of absence and went up to the University of Alaska in Fairbanks and just took some Russian language courses, among other things, while I was up there, so that I became more fluent in Russian. And when I came back in 93 and taught again, the program was in place, and Larry had gotten the necessary paperwork and everything done to have the course, and students had signed up for the course. So we offered actually a Russian language course then,
right,
in 93, and then again in 94, and then I retired.
Now, was the second, when you came back in 92, were you teaching via tapes also, or just totally on your knowledge and textbooks?
Basically on my knowledge and textbooks when I came back. So I had learned a lot. I still was not really fluent. I had many students who were really excellent students. Russian is such a hard language. There are so many things that you have to learn.
Right.
And it's really difficult, and it takes a lot of studying. And I have to say that I had so many students that worked so hard in there. The first time I taught it, when it was with the tapes and with the when I did the, I supplemented with the history and research. I have, there are two students from that class that went on to become Russian majors.
Wow.
And a couple of others of those students have, of my students then were, have Russian minors. One of the students is now teaching at the college, and she's also teaching the Russian class at the high school, and that's Kim Wallace. And she graduated from University of Alaska Fairbanks.
And that's where she pursued her
Russian
studies.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and
neat.
And the other student is Amy Oliver, and she is currently a Russian translator in Moscow. And
wow.
She graduated from Georgetown University.
Great.
And Dwayne Craik, who is going to Stanford, is, as far as I know, he has had Russian as his minor. The students that I've had in 93 and 94 are they're just graduating from high school now.
Right.
So I don't know whether they will continue on with Russian or not. A lot of the ones that are seniors now, I had as juniors in Russian too. And they didn't offer Russian 3.
Right. So it was a two-year program, basically, and you did both years?
I did both years, yeah. And if I hadn't retired, we probably would have had Russian 3.
Right.
And then a lot of the students that I had last year continued on with Russian 2 this year. And I haven't talked to anybody, so I don't know what's happening with the Russian program. I mean, I don't know how many students are involved with the Russian program this year. But from what I understand, they're not going to offer it.
Oh, really? Well, that's sad.
Yeah, it is. And it's rather interesting that Russian has had such a on and off course here in Kodiak, because this place is you know, this is sort of the seat of Russian culture,
right,
where basically this was the first capital of, quote-unquote, of Russian America. There are a lot of people here that have Russian heritage, and there's also, you know, there are a lot of Russian words that a lot of the people use in this town that, you know, that have lived here for a long time. I mean, it's part of their language, and the church services here are conducted in Old Church Slavonic, which is the really old Russian Orthodox, and the church here also follows the old Russian calendar, where a lot of the Orthodox churches in the lower 48 have switched over and use the calendar that Christian churches use. They use the Julian. Is it the Julian calendar?
Right.
And I think it's the Russian here use the Gregorian calendar.
Does the Russian church here, now do they have the, what's it called, the same thing as the Lutherans and for the teenagers, for the young adults, the
youth group?
Well, no. What is it called? I would know if I was catechism. That's Catholic,
know.
But it's something like that. When
I don't know if they have that or not. I don't really think so. But you know, they have the seminary.
You're right.
That's located.
Now, do they teach? Do they conduct classes in Russian there? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't know if they do or not. I don't think so, but I think that most of the priests and the instructors there are knowledgeable in Russian, and a lot of the writings are in Russian. We haven't really talked about my experiences as a teacher teaching this, but this is what... I don't know what would you like to know about? I mean, teaching it is just basically, when you're learning a language, it's a lot of repetition.
Right.
Maybe I should talk about how we started out the class, like in a first year class.
Okay, that'd be great.
The very first thing that the kids have to learn is the alphabet, because they can't do anything until they learn the alphabet.
So what you're doing then, you're teaching them to speak Russian but also to write Russian at the same time.
Right.
Ooh,
right.
That's hard.
So when we started out, we would learn some words and we would repeat those, but we did learn the alphabet, and the basically the first month of class was learning how to write the alphabet. A lot of Russians don't print. They write instead, you know, but one of the things that makes it so difficult is you have to learn to recognize the printed letters. You also have to learn to recognize the written letters too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I say, this class at the high school was conducted as an honors class, which meant that it was a little bit more intense, but students didn't have to be honor students to take it. Anybody who wanted to could take the class. So, because basically it was memorization, and I tried to make it as fun and interesting, but a lot of it is just really drudge work doing this.
What was your turnout as far as students participating in the class? Do you think you had a good turnout?
Yeah, I think I had a really good turnout. The first year I taught it, we had two first year classes, and there were approximately 20 kids in each class. Actually, when we started out with the two classes, there were probably 50 kids, and I would say 10 dropped.
Right.
So we ended up with about 40 kids. The second year I taught, we had a two-year class, which was the sort of a combination of the first two classes, and there were like, I think there were 24 or 25 kids in that. So approximately a little bit more than half went on to the second year Russian. And then we had two classes of first year Russian with approximately, let's say, approximately between 20 and 25 kids.
Well, that's
in
good.
Each one of those classes.
Yeah,
the one problem that we ended up with the second year with the first year students was that there were some students that had signed up for the class that thought that it was going to be pretty easy. and they had to and they had to work a little bit harder, I think, than they wanted to, because the class was a substitute for a social studies class.
I see.
The way the school district used the classes, Russian and Japanese were also considered social studies classes, even though they were basically language classes. So kids could take Russian or Japanese instead of taking, for example, Western Civ or Pac Rim Studies.
But it also met their foreign language requirement if they had wanted that.
It basically, yeah, served double duty. It would serve as a social studies credit, and they could also get, if they took 2 years of it, then they would have a language credit also. So that worked out really well. And like I said, the second year, there were some kids that came in there that they didn't want to take Pac Rim Studies, so they figured they'd take Russian, and it didn't turn out quite the way they thought it was going to turn out.
No, not quite that easy A, huh?
But, you know, I mean, like I say, anybody who wanted to could take it, and you didn't have to be an honor student to take it, because it just meant you had to do some work. So once we learned the alphabet and they learned how to write, it was just basically drill work and practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I really tried to have the kids, how do I want to say this? I would let them retake their tests in there, because if they didn't learn the alphabet, they couldn't go on.
Right.
So the goal was to be able to write and be able to do these tests as and get as good a grade as they could.
When you had the first section that was by tape, now did you feel like that was an adequate pace? Did it go too fast? Was that just an interesting experience there? Experiment, I guess, too.
That was that one was taught by a native-born Russian, and it was sort of hard to grasp. The kids learned a little bit of language through that, but they didn't really learn. She didn't really teach the alphabet as such, but she did a lot of writing. It's more of an immersion type that she taught, and so it was repetitious. But it was, for me, it was hard to follow. Right. I think it was sort of hard for the kids to follow. And so what I did with that program in the very beginning was I taught the kids the alphabet before we started watching the videos, so they knew the alphabet as she was going through. And using the different letters and writing the different letters, they already knew the alphabet, so that gave them a little push,
yeah.
And they were better able to understand her. And I know that one of my students that went on to college didn't finish college, but she went to the University of Alaska Anchorage and took Russian there. And she told me after she came back one of her vacations that she said, she was the envy of the class there, because the beginning Russian students didn't know Russian, and so she already knew the alphabet and she knew some of the words, so that gave her a little heads up over the other students. So that made me feel good, because you know, you never know while you're doing some of this teaching what kids think and what is going on. The first year I taught it in 1993, Susan Oliver arranged for students to go to Russia if they wanted to study for a semester, because we had some Russian visitors come here to Kodiak, and it was arranged through privately, and it was I don't know if the ones that came here, whether they were arranged partially through a church group or not, but the second year, or the summer, no, it was a semester, after the first, after 93, that group of kids, there were three young ladies that went to Moscow and studied for a semester.
Now, was that like on an exchange program?
Well, it wasn't. It was sort of, they said it like an exchange program because the Russians had come here. Mm-hmm. But it was privately arranged.
And they went to a Russian school?
They lived in private homes and they and went to Russian schools. I'm trying to think now. Katie Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie Donelsky. And who was the other one?
That's okay. We can have blank space.
Okay.
We can have airtime.
Okay. Oh, gosh, how can I forget who else went? There were three. Who was the other one that went? I can't even remember that now. Anyway, they stayed over in Russia. Maybe I'll think of it as we're talking.
Right.
But they were in Moscow from August, I think, through December. And it was quite an experience.
Now, when they came back, they were still in their high school years, right?
They were second semester juniors. Katie and the other young lady, who had been in my class, too, elected to take Russian at the college because they were far advanced. And Jackie Donelsky had not had Russian before.
Mm-hmm.
And so she came into the Russian class and took Russian then. She took second year Russian,
right?
Because she had been, you know, she had been over there and she had spoken it for, or learned it. She didn't know the alphabet, so she had to sort of do double duty and pick up and learn the alphabet. But the second year I taught it, which was last year, for me, it was a bit of a disappointment because I had some medical problems, and not serious ones or anything like that, but I did find out after I had retired that I had had walking pneumonia for a semester, and I was really tired the second semester, and I missed a lot of school, so I ended up going out not on such a, you know, like you want to go out with a bang and
right.
have everything be so good, and so I wasn't able to really do what I wanted to with any of my classes because of that, because I would be teaching and, you know, I'd work for 3 days and I'd be so worn out and then I'd have to take a couple days off, and so there was not a lot of continuity. So what I did in the Russian classes was switch over to history.
Right.
And so we didn't do so much language the second semester as I had wanted to do, but we did a lot of history.
When the girls came back then from overseas, I was going to say from Russia.
Yeah.
Now, did they enjoy sharing their activities and their experiences with the class?
Oh, yeah.
Did they bring a lot of interesting
they
stuff
did.
Back?
They did. And we, you know, they talked to the class, but because they were, and Jackie was a member of the class,
mm-hmm.
she was able to relate a lot of things, you know, just as we would be talking in class, she would relate her experiences. So,
mm-hmm.
so it was really interesting. I would say that the Russian students are probably more independent than the American students.
Right. Now, have you ever been over to Russia?
My husband and I went to Russia in the summer of 1990. We went on the Alaska Airlines tour. We went to Siberia,
mm-hmm.
and we traveled. To Khabarovsk and to Irkutsk, and we were there for 8 days. We rode the Trans-Siberian Railroad.
Wow.
We rode on Aeroflot. It was wonderful.
What about food and drink and cultural stuff in that area?
It was. I don't have anything to base it on because I haven't been to Western
right.
Russia. There were a lot of people on our tour that had been to Moscow and St. Petersburg and Kiev, and they said that Siberia was very primitive, and they didn't really care for it. I thought it was really interesting, and the cities that we were in, Irkutsk and Khabarovsk, were huge cities, 800,000
right.
people. Style-wise, they were probably 10 years behind the United States as far as merchandise, things to buy. You know, the stores were empty. But we ended up buying our youngest daughter's wedding dress there.
Oh, fascinating.
And so, and she did. She wore it for her wedding.
Oh, neat.
So she, that was really neat.
What was the response of the people towards you?
Us? They were very friendly. Very friendly. But this was, we went in July of 1990, and in August of 1990 was when the coup occurred.
Right.
And then all the problems, you know, the eventually the Soviet Union just disintegrated.
Right.
So we were there right at the end. Siberia has always been sort of unto itself, though,
right.
Because
kind of
it's so far away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised at how modern it was. And Irkutsk is known as the Paris of Siberia. And Khabarovsk, they were beautiful cities. Architecture was fascinating. When we were in Irkutsk, we rode a hydrofoil on Lake Baikal.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem was it was so foggy we couldn't see anything. So. Weather-wise, it was very warm. It was very tropical while we were there. It rained quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people complained because they had to walk as far as they had to walk in places. Well, why couldn't the bus pick us up right here? Why did we have to walk in this area? But I really enjoyed it. I'd love to go back, but not until things settle down
right.
a little bit.
So then after your trip, it was kind of like give you kind of a incentive to want to
learn,
teach.
More. Well, and
learn.
This was a couple of years before I went to off to Fairbanks to study Russian.
Right.
I found that when I went there, that it was really hard for me, even though I knew some phrases and knew a little bit of Russian. It was really hard for me to converse in Russian, because as soon as you would say a few words, then the people just rattled off that you understood what, and it was really difficult. So I just sort of dropped all Russian communication except spasiba, which is thank you, you know, privet, or zdravstvuyte, which is hello. You know, and you could say those, and that would be it. Then you couldn't talk any more than that, because they would just be talking so fast it would be difficult to understand. Just as when we speak English, we don't realize how fast we're speaking.
Right.
But
I don't know. I've seen that problem.
Yeah.
How about now that you're retired, or that you're just a member of the community? Do you ever get called upon to use your Russian?
No. But I think part of that is because I'm not so fluent.
Right.
There are other people in town that are much more fluent than I. And as for one, Jerry Wilson is. I don't know how many Russians have been in town.
Huh.
There used to be quite a few more Russian boats that came into town before I started teaching. And then Georgine Sink was here for a while too, and she worked at she quit teaching and she was working at the newspaper, and she spent a year in Siberia, in Khabarovsk, and in Vladivostok, in that area. So she did a lot of translating too. But she just recently left, and I haven't been called on. And Kim Wallace is much more fluent than I in Russian. She studied in St. Petersburg for 2 summers, so she really knows the language.
Yeah, but I think who promoted that, and so you have to feel good about that.
Oh, I do. I really feel good. I feel sad, although I haven't talked to anybody, but I'm just under the understanding that the Russian is not going to be taught. And like I say, I just, you know, it's had its ups and downs, and I it's really strange to me that...
being so close.
And I'm just wondering if it's part of it is because of the heritage and the feeling, although, you know, the Aleuts and the Koniags are Russian Orthodox. You know, they follow the Orthodox faith. I know that some of the feelings towards the Russians themselves are not so good, you know, in the early history. But then again, neither are some of the things that are connected with Japanese history.
Right.
Too, you know, and Japanese is a going concerned. But I think the Japanese and the Russian program, when I started that early one back in 88,
mm-hmm.
The Russian and the Japanese program started at the same time. And I think that the fact that we had to drop that program hurt the Russian program.
Right.
So when we started it again in 93, I really thought it was going to make a go of it, because the kids really enjoyed it. They seemed to really enjoy it. And like I say, you have to work hard. But then if you know, some things you have to work hard that are worthwhile. And so I just, like I say, I don't know what is happening with the program now.
Okay, let's take a break.
Okay.
Okay, and we're back. And what? Now you've found out something new.
Well, we were talking about how we thought Japanese and Russian were so important in this area. And Japanese seems to be doing fine, but the Russian has had its ups and downs. And I don't know why. Maybe if we would have had a continuous program from 88 on through, the Russian program would have really taken hold now, especially with the, you know, it's really hard for me to understand why Russian isn't more popular.
With the proximity and...
With the closeness to Russia and the fact that there is so much business going on with the Russian Far East, the opening up of the Russian Far East, not only for economic ventures in business, but also because of the fishing. There are a lot of Kodiak fishermen who are forming joint ventures with with the Russian fleet too, and it's I know that Russian is a really hard language, and I remember talking to Georgine Sink one time, and she told me the reason that she didn't teach Russian was because she had too many people in her class that expected to be able to speak Russian in a month.
Right.
And she felt, her feeling was that students in the high school should not be allowed to take Russian until they have had at least 2 years of English, intensive English grammar, and mm-hmm. then they can take Russian. And I can see that, because you really learn your English grammar when you take Russian, because it the things are, the language is so based on grammar. And if you don't know English grammar, then you really have a problem. And so many American students don't know English grammar. Yeah. I found that even at the college, that when I was in Fairbanks, there were so many students who didn't know what a direct object was, or an indirect object. And if you don't know this, you can't learn Russian, because you have to know this for the different cases in Russian. We have three cases in English that we really don't talk about that much, because it's not such a big part of our grammar, but Russian has six cases.
Mm.
And you have to know these cases to be able to speak effectively in Russian.
Right.
And I just heard, as we took our break, that the Russian is not going to be taught next year at the high school, and that the students that need Russian for the second year Russian for their language credit will have to take it through correspondence.
Now, at the expense, is that the expense of the high school?
The high school will pay for that, for the students to take that. It's a correspondence course that they order, I guess, and then the students do it on their own time. And they have to send
in. And what do they have, who do they have for guidance?
Well, basically it's probably tapes is what it is. Or it may be something like the correspondence program that we bought back in 88.
Right.
But
and did you have a reason for the discontinuation of the program? Did you find out if it was funds or participation?
I think basically it's funding, because this year the way the program was set up, the high school did not fund the Russian teacher. Kim Wallace, who was the Russian teacher at the high school, was paid with funds through the University of Alaska, since she's teaching at the college.
Right.
So it was the college that paid for this. So basically what they did was, when I quit, they eliminated that position. And there as far as I know, there isn't anybody else in town who is who is a Russian teacher, who is a Russian major. And this district did not go out too vigorously last year when I left to
recruit
to find a Russian teacher. In fact, I was told by the principal to be that he didn't think that the Russian program would go, and I went in and talked to him and really fought for it, because I think that the kids that were taking it and taking it as a Russian for a Russian language credit, plus the fact that there was such a big turnout. There were almost, I'm going to say, a third more students who had signed up for Russian than for Japanese. Each year that the Russian program was in effect, there were more students who signed up for Russian than for Japanese, yet they dropped the Russian program.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And you would think that with our history and our proximity to Russia, that they would encourage
the Russian. Yeah. So anyway, I guess that's pretty much all I have to say about this. But I did enjoy my years that I taught at the high school, and I especially enjoyed the years that I taught Russian,
right?
Because it was, to me, it was really a joy, and to see the kids learn something like this, and to really, I really liked it because the students I had were so responsible, but they had to take the responsibility on themselves to learn this. And to watch them learn and to see how they became such responsible students, not only for Russian, but I think it helped them in their other classes too.
Right.
I really
sure.
I really did enjoy that.
Well, good. Well, thanks. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Don.